This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:16. You're listening to the evening edition with Sharmila. Now we're moving on to a story about private universities and the fact that over the last year, they've really had to go through a huge change in terms of how they deliver their lessons. They've had to adopt online learning and they've continued to face struggles such as a decline in tuition fees, a huge decrease in the enrollment of international students, given the fact that they can't come into the country. So we wanted to look at how universities are coping with this shift and what this might mean in terms of looking to the future, how this changes the way lessons are going to continue being delivered and how it changes their business model and essentially how they continue to stay afloat. So we, according to a report in the Malaysian Reserve last year, 20% of our private higher education institutions here are at risk of closing because of that lower international student intake and as a result, a decline in tuition fees. So this is really an issue that has gone on for a really long time. And I think as we move towards getting people vaccinated, as we talk about borders reopening, the question has become, how is this going to impact the future? Because this isn't going to happen at an equal rate. It's not going to happen all at once. So how are our private higher education institutions coping? And what can they do to weather the storm, so to speak? So share your thoughts with us. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now crossing over to Dr. Jeffrey Williams, who is a professor at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Dr. Williams, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
So it's been more than a year into the pandemic. Could you give us a picture of how the university has been coping with online learning?
I think that it's been a mixed picture. I think if you listen to some of the vice chancellors, they will tell you that they've moved as smoothly as possible to online learning. But I think for students and faculty, it has been a little more challenging, perhaps, than people realize. And I think part of the reason has been that we've had to deal with quite a lot of uncertainty. Some of us felt that actually the impact of the lockdowns would be quite short, and we hoped that we would return to campus quite soon. So I think some people have delayed making the investment in moving to online. And there have been a lot of challenges in that, both for faculty and for students. And as you've said, because this is stretching on now for more than a year, I think that some people, particularly the students, are running out of patience with some of the problems that they're facing with online learning. And I think that some of the faculty are still struggling with the idea of whether or not this is going to be a permanent change in the way that they deliver their programs. So this is something I think, we're really struggling with. We're still struggling with it even after a year.
What would you say have been the biggest challenge for both lecturers and students?
Well, there was a report just this week, I think just a day or so ago in Australia, and I think many of the issues that they face in Australia are common all around the world, and particularly here in Malaysia. And reading the report, certainly some of these issues resonated with me, and they've indicated that as many as half of the students weren't very happy with the online delivery, and they've mentioned things such as technical issues in terms of connectivity. But more significantly than that, I think, are issues to do with interaction with their peers, interaction with the learning process, engagement with faculty, engagement with their studies. Isolation, I think, is an issue that some students struggle with. And these are really quite difficult things to solve online. People come to university, particularly undergraduates, come to university because they expect to have quite a valuable social engagement. It's not just the study that goes on, and they've been missing that, actually. And I think many students want to have that campus feel. They want to be back with their friends and their colleagues. They want to go to the student societies and the student activities. And all of these things are issues that have made the overall learning experience for students in the last year or so really rather unsatisfactory for them, I'm afraid.
Now, I want to talk about the process and more specifically the cost of converting, you know, all these things, the course materials, the experience of learning into online teaching. How has that been like? Has it been, how much has it cost?
Well, I think some universities are claiming that they're spending quite a lot of money. I mean, some people call tens of millions of ringgit in terms of investment, but I'm not too sure whether that's just investment in the technology infrastructure or what they're doing in terms of that amount of money. It appears to be a very large amount of money from my perspective. I think a lot of the costs have actually fallen on the academics, who are being asked to spend a lot of time without additional pay in most instances to convert their materials into an online format, because the materials were almost universally not designed to be used for online teaching. And creating materials for online teaching is very different to creating materials for face-to-face teaching. And it's not really the ringgit cost, it's the cost in time, I think, for the faculty. And I think many faculty have been working very long hours and weekends and all of their spare time to try to get these things into shape.
Now, you've highlighted quite a number of the challenges in this process. I was wondering whether there has been any plus side. I mean, I would think perhaps we gained a certain amount of accessibility when it comes to learning online.
Yes, I think that some students are happier to be able to have more flexibility in their studies and to be able to get access to learning materials, particularly videoed lectures and so on, from a central depository more easily than they have done before. I think another benefit is that people have learned that there are very many different ways of studying, and there are very many different ways of learning. And instead of the sort of traditional go to the lecture, go to the class at a particular time in a particular place, I think many people have gained a lot of value out of being able to study in a more flexible environment. But it depends very much on your learning style. You see, when I was a student, I really liked to have flexibility in learning approaches. But some students prefer to have the structure of the scheduling for classes and so on. But I think overall, we have learned a great deal about how we can deliver our programs in many and varied different ways. We've learned which approaches work and which are not so successful. And I think we've also, amongst the faculty, we've all learned a number of new skills.
Now, I want to talk about the particular group of students who are most impacted by not being able to come in physically, which is, of course, the international students, right? With the borders being closed, they haven't been able to enroll into universities here in Malaysia for more than a year now. Do you see this continuing, and how would this affect universities as a whole?
Well, the ministry has allowed foreign students to come back into Malaysia from January. But you're right to say that many students, international students in particular, have been affected by the lockdowns and the travel restrictions. And even though the registrations are now more open, there are still some blockages in terms of applications for visas and also testing before you arrive. But I think a more important factor is that international students have become more cautious about whether they want to enroll now or whether they want to wait until everything is properly settled so that they can come full-time and start their programs completely. I mean, because it's a very big disruption in their life. It's a very big cost in terms of their investment, and they don't really want to travel to another part of the world only to be sitting at home doing online courses, which they could have been doing back in their home country. So that caution, I think, is still going to have a big effect on international enrollment. I think already already during last year and probably through this year as well, we're going to see international enrollments really quite tight and quite restricted. And some estimates are that international enrollments may have fallen by more than 50%.
You've written and spoken quite a bit about your concern that what we've seen in the last year is part of a larger crisis and a sort of sea change that surrounds higher education. Could you talk to us about that?
Well, I think one of the biggest issues, of course, is the impact on revenues for universities. And I've done a great deal of research, which I've spoken about on BFM before, about the financial viability of the private universities and the extended period of these lockdowns and the extended effect that's had on revenues has forced a lot of universities to look at their business models and particularly to try to look at how they can contain costs. And I think in some instances, they've made very important strategic decisions to move much more assertively into online programs. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily a good strategy for them in the longer term, because there are a lot of international universities that are also moving into online education, and I think that they're going to face a great deal of competition.
Now, with the vaccine rolling out in phases, are you optimistic that things might improve or return to the way they were?
Well, we always try to accentuate the positive. We always try to be as positive as possible. But unfortunately, I don't see that things will get back to a stable position very, very quickly during this year. Because even if we have the vaccine rollout, it's not quick. And certainly we know here in Malaysia, it's not particularly quick because of the hesitancy in registering, for example. But also the effect on international students and international travel is also not going to be solved quickly either. So I think we still have some headwinds during the course of the year. I think there are signs that the sector is picking up, and it's good that we're returning to campus more often and we're starting to see students more than we did before. I mean, seeing them face to face, and we did before. We love to see them, and it's nice to get back to that sort of proper university experience. But I think probably for the rest of this year, it's going to be quite difficult.
Dr. Williams, thanks so much for speaking with us this evening.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Dr. Jeffrey Williams speaking to us about what the future holds for the higher education industry here in Malaysia. Share your thoughts with us. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up, we wrap up the news of the week. So keep it here on The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.